shed.
Hello and welcome to day 12 of the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. It's about time for some Star Trek, isn't it? Deep Space Nine, anyone? Let's open the door.
They broke 7 of your transverse ribs and fractured your clavicle.
Ah, but I got off several cutting remarks, which no doubt did serious damage to their egos.
Oh, Garrick, this isn't funny.
I'm serious, Doctor. Thanks to your ministrations, I'm almost completely healed. But the damage I did to them will last a lifetime.
We're at the London Film and TV Comic Con, and you're here with all your adoring fans from people that know you from Dirty Harry, Hellraiser, and of course, right. Deep Space Nine. What's the character that most fans associate you with? Would it be Garrick?
You know, it would be Garrick, but then I find in England, Dirty Harry was enormously successful.
Yes.
So, and over the years, that's almost been as much as, well, and I should say that Hellraiser also.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because over the years, different generations kind of like come through and the shows are recycled, so equally between those three, yeah.
When you first got cast in Dirty Harry as a Scorpio killer by Don Siegel, the Zodiac killings were obviously very prominent in San Francisco, but no one knew who it was. So when you're cast as a killer that no one knows anything about, how do you go about portraying that?
For me, I always try to come up with some kind of backstory. And the backstory for the Scorpio killer, and I got it from the costume that they gave me, because they gave me a belt with a peace sign buckle, and then they also gave me paratrooper boots. That the same kind of boots that my father wore in World War II, and when he was a paratrooper, and so I basically then just came up with the backstory that he had been in Vietnam, and Vietnam had driven him crazy, and he came back this deranged person.
You obviously have fun with the role, because I think I can tell you, you're ad-libbing a lot of scenes with Clint when you're taking out his gun and going, "That's a big one," and calling him Hubba Hubba.
That's right, fascist pig. Yeah, right.
What was he like to work with? Because he's quite methodical. Doesn't like to do many takes, and you're from the stage. What was it, a clash of styles, or
no, not at all. I mean, because actually, I hate doing a lot of takes too, and being from the theater, I don't need a lot of takes.
Yeah,
you know, once I know what I'm doing, you know, then it's I love just doing it, and as I say, hitting it and quitting it. But I think the great. The great contrast with Clint and myself in that we're the temperaments, and that's who we are as people. I mean, like, he really is a very contained man, very professional, and not a lot to say, unless you're a good looking woman, and I wasn't. But yeah, and also the way the characters were written, and basically it's Don Siegel who let me develop the character in the direction that it went, because I would come up with ideas or I would come up with bits of action and so forth, and he just went with it. When he found out that I was one of my backgrounds, theatrical backgrounds, was from physical theater. So I could, basically I was not quite a gymnast, but I certainly was.
Well, you could flip when you're shot.
That's right, yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, then he basically would set up shots for me in which, I was on the move. I mean, I was sliding down a banister or whatever.
You were talking about the different kind of styles and how you played him unhinged. Because you play Scorpio, you're slapping the kids and yelling them at them. When you're playing a villain like that, do you find it more terrifying when they're that much of a loose cannon, or when they kind of play their menace under the surface?
The thing about, I only discovered this one, I think, after I did Dirty Harry. I honestly that performance surprises me because it had every pitfall that you can imagine. It would have been so easy, especially in those moments you mentioned when he's going off the deep end, for it to become operatic and over the top. And it didn't, which I'm, of course, eternally grateful for. I mean, and I think it's because I did plug into something, into my own rage, and stayed true to that, so that it never became theatrical.
Yeah.
Right.
It always became disturbing in that you don't know what he's going to do next.
Right.
Like, yeah.
But yeah, and you take a character like Garrick, and I think then I. And these characters are popular. I'm obviously being part of either a film or a franchise that people have admired and watched over the years. But I think also because of those characters, I think that I did stay true to what the core was. And for Garrick, it's as opposite from, say, the Scorpio, which was internal, which was working from a subtext, and keeping it, keeping that containment of the character.
When Dirty Harry came out, obviously it was a big hit, but I read that you personally received death threats from people because of your portrayal.
Yeah.
What was their major gripe with you, and how did you feel about
them? They were just insane people.
Insane
people who who knows?
You just became the source of their unfocused rage.
And only in the past year have I, my phone number has been unlisted, and I unlisted the
Don't
unlisted.
Tell me you've been getting death threats.
No, but it freaked me out so much that, I mean, it was like,
wow.
It's an odd thing.
After the film, did you feel that the success was a boon to your acting career, or do you feel you got pigeonholed into those kind of more sinister roles, like a Child's Play 3 or Hellraiser?
Jesus. I mean, it gave me a career, a film career, and it took it away at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, there was one casting, a woman who was the head of casting at Warner Brothers admitted to me years later that I had an appointment to meet with her shortly after Dirty Harry came out, when I'd moved out to California. Or I hadn't moved out to California, I was just out in California. And she was looking out her window and she saw me coming down the path to her office. And she said to her assistant, "Who's that?" She said, "That's Andy Robinson, that's your next appointment." She says, "Cancel it. I can't meet with him."
Because so, you terrified her? Or?
I mean, she, whatever, yeah. Exactly, and I guess she thought that who the hell is this guy that is coming into my office that played this character?
So do you feel that the character of Scorpio was so disturbing that people wouldn't want to cast you for that reason?
Oh, absolutely.
Or because of that reason?
I think both.
So she did a good job.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I mean about it. It stayed true to, the thing is about playing somebody who's insane. You have to go there.
Yeah.
I mean, and whatever that means to somebody. But I mean, but the people who are sitting in the theater, whether it's a film or live. I mean, people know the difference.
Yeah.
Even if they're untutored, if they don't have, have not been educated in terms of like what acting is about and so forth. People can tell the difference.
Yeah. After the role, you kind of because you were known as one of those villain actors. One of my films that I personally love is Shoot to Kill, or it's known as Deadly Pursuit here in the UK,
right,
where Sidney Poitier is hunting for a killer in the woods,
right,
and you don't know who it is until the third act, and there's a group of fishermen, it's you, Clancy Brown, Richard Mouser, and the audience knows you all from various past villainous roles, so they're not 100% sure who it is. When you're cast in a role like that, based on your past performance, do you feel that says something about people respond to you in that way, or do you just feel I've been put up for another role because...
You know, at that point, I'd kind of cycled through my, you know, because I was really upset about how I was received and how I was perceived as an actor. I mean, you know, because I was a trained actor. I am a trained actor. I went to drama school here, and I worked on stage, you know, for several years before I got that film, and so. To be perceived like that was very confusing to me, and it was very upsetting. By the time I did Shoot to Kill, I was just glad, fine, you know, they're gonna. I go to the Canadian Rockies. It'll be several weeks of being in a beautiful place. They'll pay me well. I'll get to meet Sidney Poitier. So fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that's how I felt at that time. Exactly.
And you got a quite spectacular death.
A wonderful death, yeah, absolutely.
Walk backwards off the cliff. At that point in your career then, when you're offered the role of Garrett, and like I said, you're a trained actor, what was your impression of science fiction at that time? Were you like, I'm just going to be there wearing makeup, this is going to be ridiculous? What was it like? You originally went up for Odo rather than Garrett.
That's right, I did. And I knew nothing about Star Trek. You know, I think I saw maybe an episode or two of the original series, and I thought it was really cheesy.
Yeah.
You know, I thought the production values were, you know, odd, and the acting was kind of stiff. You know, Shatner doing his sort of heroic thing and whatever. And so, and I didn't want to go in for the, I went up for Odo because it was a series regular. And then when they called, and then... They called me back three times, and it was great. Renee got it. He was the right person. But when they called me up about Garrick, I didn't want to go in.
No.
And my wife said, don't be an idiot. We still have bills to pay. and thank God, you know, and she's done that to me a number of times in my life.
At what point did you know they were going to be bringing him back as a series regular?
You know, well, he was never a regular.
No, but a recurring character.
Well, it wasn't until the second year.
Really?
Yeah, and then they were being very coy about it. They said, "Well, you know, we have interest in you for some other episodes." I said, "Fine, you know, but I'm not going to wait for you to call."
Yeah,
and I didn't. Sometimes they would call, and I would be off in someplace else.
The character of Garrett is probably the most layered one in not just Deep Space Nine, but the whole of Star Trek. He's a killer. But he's a tailor. He is a friend to the characters, but at the same time, he is a master of secrets. What's it like to play a character who is so layered and at the same time so beloved?
Wonderful. It's wonderful to play that because it's all about subtext. It's where I learned. It's where I learned how to work with an active subtext.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the first time on film that I actually pulled that off. And that, you know, probably the first time in film that I had a character where I could pull that off. Because with film, you know, it's you have such power if you have a strong subtext. So you can play internal actions.
And one of my favorite episodes you're in is actually Impossible, where your base Cardassian killer instinct comes out and you kill a couple of Starfleet officers.
Yeah.
Out of rage, and then at the end you show incredible remorse for what you've done.
It was a strange episode. I hated doing that episode.
You didn't go to jail for it. They let you off.
That's right. Yeah, but it was very strange episode. But it was very effective for that reason. And I think I hated it because it was sort of like going back to.
It's very dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're clearly still in touch with the cast. You're Alexander Siddig's son's godfather.
Yeah.
And I know you're appearing in What We Left Behind, the documentary.
We all are.
I mean, it's going to be almost 20 years now since Deep Space Nine ended.
It'll be 25 next year.
Are you just surprised at how the fan base keeps growing? And
yes.
How it's probably one of the most beloved Star Trek series. I think it's got more relevant with time, the subtext of the series.
Well, that's it. I mean, with things like Netflix and recycling it through and the whole new generations, it's amazing. That's why I'm here. And next year will be the 25th anniversary, so there'll be all kinds of you know, celebrations about that.
It's going to be great. And I know you feel that being pigeonholed as a villain might have been detrimental to some regard, but do you find it fun playing villains?
I love playing villains.
Yeah.
I love playing villains. It's just that Dirty Harry kind of like put me in a box for a while, because that was more than just your customary villain. That was something, that was a first of its kind. That kind of psychotic, raging, you know.
Your favorite on-screen death? Or being punched by Sylvester Stallone?
No, that was not it. That I mean, not... you know, Sylvester, he changed the ending of the entire film. Because he had killed so many people during the course of that film. I was supposed to have been revealed, my shirt ripped off with a big satanic tattoo, and then killed. And then he said that was boring. And I said, well, how do you want to end this? And he says, well, why don't I just punch you? And I said, okay. It's not my least favorite film. No. Anyway, yeah. I loved the one in Shoot to Kill.
Yeah.
I absolutely. Right. But the other one too, which was really weird, was Child's Play.
Three.
Yes.
Yeah.
With, you know, to being my throat slit by a puppet. That was pretty weird.
It's an interesting way to go.
Yeah.
Andrew, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
It's been a good
pleasure. Right.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks so much to Andrew Robinson and of course Ty for that. Now that interview came about because Ty was interviewing Andrew for his book Born to be Bad, which is a book of all Ty's conversations with some of the villains of those 80s action movies. It is a wonderful book. I would recommend it to anybody who enjoys this podcast. And we've obviously talked about it before, but that's why Ty's voice is slightly quieter than you might expect for one of our normal interviews, is because it wasn't meant to be here. But hey, this is the Advent calendar, and it just seemed too good to miss out on. We'll see you tomorrow for day 13 of the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.